Good afternoon. I'm Dr. David Blumenthal, President of the Commonwealth Fund. Thank you for joining us to hear about a new Commonwealth Fund brief being published tomorrow with findings from the latest biennial health insurance survey. I'll provide some brief background and then turn to Sarah Collins, Vice President for the Commonwealth Fund's Program on Healthcare Coverage and Access and lead author of the study, for an overview of the survey results. The information discussed on this call is embargoed until 12:01 a.m. Eastern Time on Thursday, February 7th. The Biennial Health Insurance Survey offers a big-picture look at Americans' health insurance, including the quality of their coverage, in 2018, 8 years after the passage of the Affordable Care Act. It finds that more U.S. adults are underinsured compared to 2014, with the largest growth among people with job-based health plans. People who are underinsured have high health plan deductibles and out-of-pocket medical expenses relative to their income, and are more likely to struggle paying medical bills or to skip care because of cost. Additionally, despite policy changes by the administration and Congress that were expected to weaken the Affordable Care Act, this survey finds no change in the adult uninsured rate between 2016 and the second half of 2018. As Sarah will detail shortly, there are several state and federal policy fixes that have the potential to extend the law's coverage gains and improve the cost protections for both individual market and employer plans. I'll turn to Sarah Collins now for the report findings.
Thank you, David. I'd like to recognize my co-authors, Herman Bhupal and Michelle Doty. The Commonwealth Fund has been fielding the Biennial Health Insurance Survey nearly every other year since 2001. In 2018, the survey company SSRS interviewed by landline and cell phone a nationally representative sample of 4,200 adults ages 19 to 64 from July through mid-November. In the study we are releasing tomorrow, we compare these 2018 results to historical data from prior biennial surveys. The study assesses the extent and quality of insurance coverage for working-age adults 8 years after the passage of the Affordable Care Act. Please go to Exhibit 1 in the chart pack. Before I go to the major findings of the study, I want to explain what we mean by inadequately covered in the report and how we measure underinsurance. First, what do we mean by inadequately covered? Working age adults fall into four mutually exclusive categories of insurance coverage based on their responses to the survey. People were either uninsured at the time of the survey, or they were insured, but also tell us they spent a time uninsured in the past 12 months, or they have been insured continuously over the past 12 months, but they are underinsured, or finally, that they've been continuously insured and they are not underinsured. The group of adults who fall into any of the first three categories are referred to as inadequately covered in the brief. This is because we find that people in each of these categories have more problems getting health care and are more likely to struggle to pay medical bills. Exhibit 2, what do we mean by underinsured? Our underinsured measure is based on a continuously insured adult's reported out-of-pocket costs over the course of a year and their health plan deductible. The purpose of this measure is to gauge the quality and cost protectiveness of someone's health plan relative to their income. We do not include premiums in the measure. Someone who is insured all year is defined as underinsured if their out-of-pocket costs over the prior 12 months are equal to 10% or more of their household income, or their out-of-pocket costs are equal to 5% or more of their household income if it is under 200% of poverty, or their health plan deductible comprises 5% or more of their income. Please go to Exhibit 3, where I highlight the major findings of the study. We find that 45% of U.S. adults ages 19 to 64 are inadequately covered. This is nearly the same as it was in 2010, but important shifts have taken place. Compared to 2010, many fewer adults are uninsured now, and the duration of coverage gaps people experience has shortened significantly. Despite actions by the Trump administration and Congress to weaken the Affordable Care Act, the adult uninsured rate was 12.4% in 2018 in this survey, statistically unchanged from 2016. More people who have coverage are underinsured now than in 2010, with the greatest increase among those in employer plans. People who are underinsured or spend any time uninsured report cost-related problems getting care and difficulty paying medical bills at higher rates than those with continuous adequate coverage. Exhibit 4. Compared to 2010, when the Affordable Care Act became law, fewer people today are uninsured, but more people are underinsured. Of the 194 million U.S. adults between the ages of 19 and 64 in 2018, an estimated 87 million, or 45%, were inadequately covered. Despite actions by the Trump administration and Congress to weaken the Affordable Care Act, the biennial survey found no statistically significant change in the adult uninsured rate by late 2018 compared to late 2016. This finding is consistent with recent federal surveys, but other private surveys, including other Commonwealth Fund surveys, have found small increases in uninsured rates since 2016. Exhibit 5. There has been no change since 2010 in the proportion of people who are insured now but who've reported being uninsured for some time during the prior 12 months. However, these reported gaps in coverage are of much shorter duration on average than they were prior to the ACA's major coverage expansions. If you look at the blue line, in 2018, 61% of people who reported a gap in their insurance said it had lasted for 6 months or less, compared to 31%, the orange line, who said they had been uninsured for a year or longer. This is nearly a reverse of what it was like in 2012, nearly 2 years before the ACA's major coverage expansions. In that year, 57% of adults with coverage gaps reported it was for a year or longer, while 35% said it was a shorter gap. Exhibit 6. Of people who were insured continuously through 2018, 29%, or an estimated 44 million people, were underinsured. This is up from 22% of continuously insured adults in 2010. If you look at the orange line, people who buy plans in the individual market or the ACA marketplaces report being underinsured at the highest rates. However, if you look at the light blue line, the greatest growth in underinsured rates is occurring among adults in employer plans. Exhibit 7. It is well documented by now that people who gained coverage under the ACA's expansions have better access to health care as a result. This has led to population-wide improvements in measures of health care access. In 2014, the year of the major coverage expansions, the share of adults in the biennial survey who said that costs prevented them from getting health care that they needed, such as a prescription medication, dropped significantly. But there has been no significant improvement since then. Exhibit 8. This lack of ongoing improvement in overall access to care reflects the fact that coverage gains have plateaued and underinsured rates have climbed. People who experience any time uninsured are more likely than any other group to delay getting care because of costs. And among people with coverage all year, those who are underinsured report cost-related delays in getting care at nearly double the rate of those who are not underinsured. Exhibit 9. Like access, there was also modest but significant improvement following the ACA's coverage expansions in the share of U.S. adults who report having difficulty paying their medical bills or said that they were paying off medical debt over time. However, those gains have also stalled. Exhibit 10. Lacking coverage or being underinsured is associated with these medical bill and debt problems. If you look at the last set of bars on the slide, we find that more than half of adults who spent any time uninsured last year reported problems paying medical bills or were paying off medical debt over time. Among people who had continuous insurance coverage, the rate of medical bill and debt problems is nearly twice as high among underinsured adults as it is for people who are not underinsured. Exhibit 11. We find that having continuous coverage makes a significant difference in whether people have a regular source of care or get timely preventive care. Adults who spent any time uninsured were the least likely to have a regular source of care or to have received preventive care like cholesterol checks in the recommended time frame. Exhibit 12. Having continuous coverage also makes a significant difference in whether someone reports getting recommended cancer screenings like mammograms. Even people with continuous coverage who are underinsured are more likely than those uninsured to receive timely preventive care or cancer screens. This is likely because the Affordable Care Act requires insurers and employers to cover recommended preventive care and cancer screens without cost sharing. Even prior to the ACA, a majority of employer plans provided pre-deductible coverage of preventive services. Exhibit 13. Federal and state policymakers have a number of options to increase coverage, shorten coverage gaps, and improve the cost protection of individual and employer plans. To increase coverage, for example, all states could expand Medicaid without restrictions like work requirements. States or the federal government can implement reinsurance programs for insurers selling through the marketplaces. These programs have demonstrated track records in lowering premiums. And Congress could pass legislation to extend premium tax credits to those whose incomes are just over the current qualifying threshold of about $100,000 a year for a family of four. To reduce coverage gaps, the federal government and the states could better inform the public about special enrollment periods so that when people lose coverage through a job, they know they can enroll in plans through the marketplaces or Medicaid without having to wait for the annual open enrollment period. To lower out-of-pocket costs in both employer plans and the individual market, Congress could pass legislation to protect consumers from surprise medical bills and provide refundable tax credits for high out-of-pocket costs that exceed a certain percentage of their income. But because healthcare costs are the primary driver of premium and deductible growth, the underlying drivers of healthcare costs themselves, like high prices, will also need to be addressed in a systematic way. Exhibit 14. Just to recap the major findings of the study, we find that U.S. working age adults are significantly more likely to have health insurance since the ACA became law in 2010. But the improvement in uninsured rates has stalled. In addition, more people are underinsured, with the greatest growth occurring in employer plans. The ACA made only minor changes to employer insurance, and the erosion in cost protection has taken a bite out of the progress made in Americans' health coverage since the law's enactment. Federal and state policymakers have a number of options to expand and improve coverage. Ongoing efforts to slow healthcare cost growth are also needed. And I'll stop there and turn this back over to David and look forward to your questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Sarah. We'll open the floor to questions now.
And at this time, if you'd like to ask a question, please press the star and one on your touchtone telephone. You can remove yourself from the queue by pressing the pound key. Once again, it's star and one on your touchtone phone. We'll pause to allow any questions to queue. And we'll take a question from Donna Rosato with Consumer Reports. Please go ahead.
Hi. I wonder, when you were in the survey, when you asked people whether they had insurance, do you know, did you factor in people who have non-ACA compliant insurance, things that aren't comprehensive?
That's a really good question. This is Sarah. It is very difficult to ask people that question on a survey, so we struggled to come up with a question that could get at that. So we do not know among people who told us they have insurance coverage. We know where they got it, so we know whether they got it through an employer, through the Medicaid program, through the individual market or the marketplaces. But among those that got it through the individual market or bought it directly from an insurance company, we actually don't know how many would have plans that aren't compliant with the ACA. I think, just to follow up on that, I think one of the biggest issues with estimating the enrollment in these plans is that people are, even if they have one of these plans, they may not even know that they have a plan that doesn't cover them very well. And so it's a struggle for people who are surveying, like us, but it's also it is also a risk for consumers who are enrolled in these plans and may not know or be aware of their limitations.
That makes sense. Thank you.
And as a reminder, it is star and one on your touchtone phone for questions. We'll go next to Rich Daly with Healthcare Financial Management Magazine. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking the question. Just wanted to follow up a little bit on the actual uninsured rates by source of coverage. I was looking at the, the rates. Obviously, we're talking about for employer-provided and individual coverage. But also saw that Medicaid and Medicare for under 65 had uninsured rates of 24% and 36%, similar to the employer and individual rates. I was just curious if, these seem that, looking at your numbers from previous years, it looks like those have been consistently high. I'm just wondering why, since Medicaid generally is perceived as having little to no out-of-pocket, and it's apparently been the case for many years now where it's had this out-of-pocket cost. But also, if any of your policy prescriptions would specifically address the uninsured, those very high uninsured rates in Medicaid and Medicare.
Thank you, Rich, for your question. And you mean underinsured, not uninsured.
I'm sorry, underinsured. Yes, I'm sorry.
So that's a really good question. So what we have seen in Medicaid and in Medicare in terms of underinsured rates are sort of relatively we didn't publish these data with this report this time, but about a quarter of people enrolled in Medicaid are underinsured, and about a third of people under age 65 enrolled in Medicare are underinsured. And what this reflects is the fact that these are people with extremely low incomes, and particularly if they're in Medicare under 65, that means they also are disabled and have very high healthcare costs. And so even small costs, if you're low income, can represent a very large share of your income. So that's the primary reason for that finding.
And what about in Medicare? Is the same apply?
So in Medicare, it's even more significant because if you're enrolled in Medicare under age 65, you are disabled. So you're only eligible for Medicare if you're disabled. So people are very poor in that category, and they also have very high out-of-pocket costs, a lot of which are not covered by their insurance.
Yeah. So then, since so many people are affected in those programs, is there any way to address that? You didn't outline it in your policy prescriptions, but I'm just offhand, is there any steps that can be done?
You know, on Medicare, what people tend to forget is that Medicare has very high out-of-pocket cost exposure, both in the particularly in the over 65 and the 65 and over population. But people have to buy additional coverage to cover those costs. So generally, the policy prescription for Medicare would be to increase the cost protection of the benefit. There are also a lot of uncovered services like long-term care services, home health services that are also not covered. On Medicaid, what we have seen in our data and is a general trending down in the percent who are underinsured enrolled in Medicaid, and that reflects the expansions, so that more people are in the program that probably have lower out-of-pocket costs just generally because they tend to be they're a healthier group. But the trend in Medicaid through the waivers, the 1115 waivers to potentially increasing out-of-pocket cost exposure, having people pay deductibles, for example, face deductibles. The measure doesn't include premiums, but generally asking people enrolled in Medicaid to pay higher costs is probably the wrong direction to go in, and really these data suggest that if anything, we should try to find ways to make coverage more protective for this group.
I see. Thanks.
We'll take our next question from Kimberly Leonard with the Washington Examiner. Please go ahead.
Hi, just a little question. When you look at inadequately covered insured at the time of the survey but report a gap in coverage in the past 12 months, I've learned from experience that often when you switch jobs, there is a little bit of a gap that can last anywhere, you know, from 1 to 2 months. And unless you get COBRA, you know, the options are then a little bit limited unless you do a short-term plan or something like that. I mean, would someone like that qualify for underinsured?
So they would qualify as having had a gap in their coverage.
Oh, okay.
So, and what we've seen what we've seen over time is that those gaps have shortened significantly since the passage of the Affordable Care Act. So fewer people, about the same number of people have a gap, and you're right. I mean, it is a characteristic of the way our insurance system is structured that people move from different, there are multiple sources of coverage, so if you're moving from one to another, particularly if you're changing jobs, you're probably going to have a gap in coverage. But what we're seeing is a trend towards those gaps being a lot shorter than they used to be when people were uninsured for long periods of time. What is concerning is that a lot of people are not aware of special enrollment periods. So if you do lose coverage through a job, you are able to immediately go to the marketplace and enroll in a plan through a special enrollment period. You don't have to wait for the open enrollment period, the annual open enrollment period. And a lot of people simply are just not aware of that option.
Mm-hmm. I mean, but what if their income is so high that they, you know, wouldn't qualify for subsidies and just might want to roll the dice over, like, you know, a month or two?
Right.
I mean, do we know that it's necessarily related to lack of information versus just, you know, not wanting to pay the full cost of unsubsidized premiums?
Potentially,
mm-hmm.
potentially. I mean, for people who aren't eligible for subsidies, may want to wait till they get a subsidized employer plan.
Okay. Thanks.
And once again, if you'd like to ask a question, it's star and one on your touchtone telephone. Star and one on your touchtone phone. And we'll take a follow-up from Donna Rosato at Consumer Reports. Please go ahead.
Sure. Sir, I'm wondering if you can talk about trends in high-deductible plans. I've seen some stats that fewer employers are making these high-deductible health plans that they're only offering, though they're still offering it. But do you see that employees are still taking them up at a high rate because they can be cheaper upfront? Or do you think employers are starting to try to do other things to try to lower their healthcare costs for employees besides imposing these big deductibles?
So that's a great question, Donna. The consistent in our survey data on the employer side has been a steady increase in both the proliferation and the size of deductibles over time. So when we look at our measure, when we break it down by those three components that we showed in the slides, the consistent growth or the consistent driver in higher underinsured rates, again, particularly employer-based plans, has been the deductible as a share of people's income. So every year we've seen an increase in the people who are underinsured because their deductible is high relative to their income. What I think that we may be seeing, though, is a slowing of the focus of employers on deductible size, that they have reached perhaps a limit in the amount of costs that they can share with their employees in order to keep their premiums down, and are shifting to other tactics. And I think that we are kind of at a place where we might, an inflection point, if you will, that we might see a change in focus and in employer involvement in their benefits.
Go
ahead.
Just very briefly, if you look at the options available to employers to reduce their liability for healthcare costs, they can share those costs with employees, or they can try to negotiate better prices with providers through their insurance companies or directly, or they can try to somehow reorganize or encourage the reorganization of the healthcare system through payment or delivery system reform. And the latter two, trying to negotiate better prices is difficult because they almost always lack market power in their individual markets.
Mm-hmm.
And reorganizing the healthcare system is a quandary for everybody, but especially for the non-professional purchasers of insurance that most employers are. We tend to think when we think of employers, of the big employers, the Walmarts, the GEs, the Fords, and they are big enough and rich enough to employ full-time benefit managers, but the great, great, great majority of employers in the United States do not have such expertise, and so they tend to default to the cheapest and quickest alternative, which is to just shift costs. And that is running out of steam right now.
And if you don't mind, if I do a quick follow-up, so if it's running out of steam and they might shift to other tactics, what might some of those other tactics be?
Well, there's a limit to what to the available options. I did a piece in the with some of my colleagues in the Harvard Business Review about a month ago that said that there were two options for employers. They had to get bigger. They had to team up with other employers to get market power to negotiate better prices, so that providers couldn't afford not to deal with them and had to reduce their prices, or they had to get smarter and figure out ways to improve the delivery of care. And some of the large employers are doing that by directly contracting with groups of physicians or with hospitals. You see that with Walmart, for example, or Boeing. And they are sending their employees to centers of excellence where they negotiate deals for elective surgery, or they are directly contracting with primary care groups on a capitated basis, hoping to get better service and cheaper service. But neither of those is an easy course to take, and so far has been available only in selected instances. So I think our employer-based insurance system is facing a crisis now that's related to the escalating healthcare costs and the limited options available to them to manage those costs.
Thank you.
I'd like to remind everyone it's star and one on your touch-tone phone for any further questions today. And it does appear we have no further questions. I'll return the floor to our speakers for any additional or closing remarks.
Well, thank you very much for joining us today, and thanks for listening. If you need additional information, we'll be available this afternoon. And just a reminder, the embargo for this report lifts at 12:01 a.m. tomorrow.